You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
When I was your age, the phone was tied to the wall with a kinky, twisty, 3.5-foot cord. It's hard to believe, but it had a ring that could not be turned off or ignored. We couldn't choose the sound of the ring. It was just the sound that we called the phone. We never heard of a ringtone.
Hey, this is George Robb, and Kevin and Cornflake can't answer the phone right now because they're busy recording the Flopcast. No, this isn't their answering machine. This is actually the Flopcast. So listen, will you?
When I was your age.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 287.
On flopcast.net.
Kevin and Cornflake like to have coffee and cartoons, and so they turned on their microphone and made a Flopcast just for you. Might be sorry, they'll still turn your sad frown upside down. Coming at you live from Chicken Town.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hello, Kevin.
How you doing?
Here we are. I'm doing swell. How about you?
Welcome to November.
Wow.
Although we might still be in October as we record this, but don't tell anybody.
It's all right.
Don't crush that illusion.
I can be pretty good at convincing people that it's a different month than it actually is.
Oh, good. Well, they'll be none the wiser then.
That's one of my talents.
This might be a quick show. We'll see how it goes, but let's do this. I think we're talking 1987 today.
Right.
This is our string of 1980s themed shows. This is episode 287 of the Flopcast. And as we did back in episode 87, 200 weeks ago, and as we did in episode 187, just 100 short weeks ago, this episode 287 will be themed around the year 1987. That was a good year. Remember 87?
I do.
All the fun we had?
Yeah. We did? Yes, yes, it was fun.
Remember how you were obsessed with RoboCop?
You mean Full House? Yes.
We had slightly different experiences that year, didn't we?
You could say you that. And I.
Now, what do you have for National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
For 1987, what's your National Whatever Day pick?
In 1987, a star exploded. Now, this happens in the galaxy all the time, but this was a big deal.
Is this when Michael Jackson's hair caught on fire?
I'm talking literal ball of gas star. I am talking about a supernova that could be seen without even needing a telescope. You could see this star exploding.
Look up and see a supernova.
And this is the first time that you could see a supernova with the naked eye from Earth since 1604. So it was SN1987A was the name of the supernova.
I do not remember this.
It first became observable in February of that year, so you probably...
Oh, yeah, I was busy.
Cold.
I was busy then, yeah.
You probably weren't outside looking up at the sky.
Nope.
It was 168 light years away.
Oh, yeah, I usually didn't get out that far.
Right. And located in... Let me put on my best science voice. Located in the large Magellanic Cloud dwarf galaxy.
Now, do you have any memory of this event from when you were around back in 1987?
I remember trying to figure out where in the sky this was.
Ah,
I remember hearing about it.
You remember being into this supernova back then.
Right. But
30 years ago.
Because people were talking about it in school. You know, it's what second graders talk about. And I remember going outside and looking up at the sky at night and trying to figure out if this is something you're supposed to be able to see without a telescope. I should be able to see it and not being able to find it.
Yeah, so you were looking for it, but you couldn't find it.
It would have just looked like a really bright star.
Sure.
So if you knew what you were looking for, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's SN1987A right there. But I think I expected to see an explosion. I didn't really understand how supernovas worked.
Yeah. That's cool that you were interested enough that you were looking for it. Because I was completely oblivious. I don't know what I was doing. I was just home, like, watching Night Court.
In the cartoons of the mid-80s, I remember there being discussions of stars and constellations.
Yeah, like, well, that was the Halley's Comet came around in,
1986.
Yeah, so there was some fun astronomy stuff happening back then.
Like, I remember there was a show where there was talk about the constellations on the Smurfs. Like, just...
You're getting most of your astronomy information from Brainy Smurf. Of course. Yeah, I mean, even these days, if I look up and see that it's a clear night, that's cool. I like to check out the stars, and I have no idea what I'm looking at. I can identify, like, the Big Dipper, if I'm lucky.
Orion's Belt.
I can find Orion. I can find the Big Dipper. I can find the moon.
What about the Seven Sisters?
No, I don't know what that is.
The Subaru?
No. There's a constellation called the Subaru?
It's where, I don't know whether the car got its name first or the constellation got named after the car. But do you remember the old Subaru logo on the car?
No, I don't think so.
That's what that was, the Seven Sisters.
Okay. I know the Ford Taurus constellation. That's...
How many of these cars were named for constellations?
All of them, apparently.
Ah, very interesting.
I wish I could find Mars, because then we could go meet Robilar. Did I ever tell you about Robilar?
No, Kevin, tell me about Robilar.
Robilar is this green dude on Mars, loves candy bars, but has recently been introduced to Earth fruit.
What does he think of Earth fruit?
Loves it. It's better than good. It's yummy and not bad. And Robilar is turning his whole diet around. He used to eat nothing but Alexander the Grape and Johnny Appletreat candies. Now, actual grapes and real apples from Earth.
What a
Earth
change.
Fruit. We should all be a little more like Robilar. If only we knew where Mars was, which we don't.
Yeah, we should be more like Robilar. I guess that means we're going to have to work on our accents.
You need a thick Boston accent like Robilar from Mars.
Greetings, Earthlings. I'm Robilar. I'm from Mars, and I eat all kinds of candy bars. But what is this? Some Earth fruit? Mmm, it is good. Mmm, it's better than good. It's yummy and not bad. I'll wait till I tell the other Martians about this. I'm only eating candy bars. We don't know what we missed.
Say, while you were up staring at the sky back in 1987, I was listening to Top 40 Radio, tuning into Casey Kasem and the American Top 40 Countdown. So what I have for you, Cornflake, in honor of 1987, we have the top 10 songs from the week ending November 14th, 1987.
Mmm, getting close to the holidays. Any Christmas music on there?
Oh, I hope not. Let's see what we're dealing with here. Number 10, Should Have Known Better, Richard Marx.
Ooh, good one.
Every Richard Marx song is really good. That's been my experience.
Yes.
We saw him earlier this year. I saw Richard Marx do a show in Woonsocket. It was wonderful. Number 9, The Pet Shop Boys. It's a Sin.
That music video.
Oh, I don't remember the video.
Oh.
Yeah?
Scary.
Good, bad, scary.
Scary.
Okay.
Very scary.
What were they doing? What's going on?
They looked like the Seven Deadly Sins.
Oh,
I think that's what was going
okay.
on.
Okay, that makes sense.
It was like a horror movie, but in music video form. And I was not ready for it. I had nightmares about that.
I never really got into the Pet Shop Boys.
What do they have going for them?
They have pets.
Just
they have a whole shop full of pets.
That doesn't necessarily make them good musicians. What other songs did they have?
West End Girls.
Yeah.
Let's Make Lots of Money. They had a weird cover of You're Always on My Mind.
I hope it's never our job to promote the Pet Shop Boys because we're in trouble.
Oh, they were okay, I guess. I just never got way into them. But all right, I got to check out this freaky, scary video then. I did not remember that.
My goodness. It made a mark. Like, I'll never forget it.
Number 8 is Madonna. Well, Madonna's been on almost every one of these lists that we've done. Madonna, Causing a Commotion. That was a goofy one.
I completely forgot about that song
until
now.
Yeah, I had the same reaction as I totally forgot about Causing a Commotion by Madonna.
Not a bad song.
Not a bad song, I suppose. I don't remember it very well. I have not listened to that song in 30 years, literally. Number 7 is another guy that has come up on many of these top 10 lists we've been doing. Bruce Springsteen, once again, with Brilliant Disguise.
I don't remember that song at all.
This was a big song. Maybe you'd know it if you heard it.
I bet I would.
I remember the video for this because this was a very unusual, very simple video. It was just in black and white, and it was just Springsteen in a room with his guitar singing the song. And it's just one shot. They just slowly pan in. They just zoom closer and closer to Springsteen until it's a super close-up, and that's the whole video.
Huh.
If someone had done that for Madonna's True Blue video contest, they would have lost. But Springsteen could do whatever he wanted.
That's true, because he's Bruce Springsteen.
Elvis Costello did a cover of this song also maybe like 20 years ago that was pretty good. Number 6 is a favorite of mine from this late 80s era. Do you remember Breakout by Swing Out Sister?
Yes.
That was good. That was fun. It was
such
weird.
An excellent song. Did it sound kind of DeBarge to you?
DeBarge? No. Do you think? Because DeBarge had the guy with the very, very high girly voice.
Right, I don't...
Whereas Swing Out Sister had the woman with sort of a rich voice.
Yeah, I don't mean vocally. I mean the styling of the song.
Huh. I never would have thought of that comparison. This song had a goofy video. It's the girl and the two guys. And the guys were like goofballs. These two guys were just kind of like making goofy faces and messing around on either side of her.
That's a great song.
They were an odd band. They had their own sound. They were doing their own thing. Swing Out Sister. They had another kind of lesser song called Twilight World.
Yeah, out of all these songs you've listed so far, that's the song that after we record tonight, I want to go back and listen to.
Sure, we all have to listen to Swing Out Sister tonight. I think they might still be around. There was a Swing Out Sister show at a club in Boston just like a year or two ago. And I was not able to go for some reason, but I think they might still be out there.
Yeah, I want to go download that on Amazon and listen to it.
Plus, we have to go see Swing Out Sister next time they come through town.
I agree.
I hope they come back.
That would be cool.
Number 5 is Belinda Carlisle, Heaven is a Place on Earth.
Now that was an inescapable song.
Still is. That's still kind of, if you think of Belinda Carlisle as a solo artist, that's like the biggest hit song of, and she had a bunch. But that's the big one.
Okay. Circle in the Sand.
Oh, yeah. She had a bunch of them. I was just reading about this song earlier today. Our friend Matthew Dix, you know, storyteller and novelist Matthew Dix, friend of the show, he wrote about this song on his blog. I just read it today, coincidentally.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, he has a problem with some of the lyrics.
Oh.
And he waited 30 years, and then he just unleashed.
He just wanted to make sure he took 30 years to do a gut check and realize it. Yeah, this is how I really feel.
Yeah. The point Matthew made is in the lyrics it says, they say in heaven, love comes first. Where does it ever say that? No one's ever said that. I think he's right.
I'm now seeing this song through Matthew Dix's eyes.
Suddenly it makes no sense at all.
Well, there's that other lyric. Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth?
Right.
But they don't say what that is.
What is it? What's she talking about?
What is that?
Mm.
I can't tell you what it's worth unless you tell me what it is.
We have a lot of questions for Belinda. I just saw her last year on the big Go-Go's farewell tour. I should have just started screaming a series of questions out of the audience.
I think I'm just going to go back to listening to I Get Weak.
That's a good idea. I like Mad About You.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she had so many great songs. Number 4 is a Fleetwood Mac, Little Lies.
So that song was neat. I felt like it didn't sound like other Fleetwood Mac songs.
Yeah.
It sounded very different.
Well, it's Christine McVie is the lead vocalist on this one. That's not Stevie Nicks. That's Christine. Stevie comes in on the chorus a little bit.
I think they put a lot of special touches on that song to make it sound, because there are plenty of straightforward Fleetwood Mac songs.
Who's your favorite member of Fleetwood Mac?
Oh, Christine McVie.
Oh, wow.
Easily.
Interesting choice.
I'm going to be so unpopular for saying this. I was not a fan of Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, I get that.
I like her as a person.
Yeah. You are very close personal friends. You've never come right out and told her what you really think of her music.
And as a songwriter and a lyricist, but her voice, Angry Goat, comes to mind. Wow.
It's amazing that you're such good friends.
Not anymore.
You just called Stevie Nicks. Her voice is like an angry goat.
I'm just telling the truth. Anyway, I really liked Christy McVie.
You know, for my favorite, just to be different, I'm going to say John McVie. I like the quiet bass player, just to keep it in the McVie family. Thank you. Let's move along. Hey, number 3 is I've Had the Time of My Life, Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes. This is from Dirty Dancing, remember?
From Dirty Dancing and from every wedding in the 80s and early 90s thereafter. So the song can't help the fact that it got overplayed. But it's not a bad song.
I'm an easy target for a sappy 80s duet.
It's good stuff. I don't think I can hear it again.
You got Bill Medley was from the Righteous Brothers.
Oh, the singer sounded fantastic.
And Jennifer Warnes. Jennifer Warnes did a bunch of stuff before this as well. I don't know if people realize. She had like a big hit in the 70s called The Right Time of the Night. And she did another big 80s duet with Joe Cocker, Up Where We Belong.
Yes.
That was Jennifer Warnes also. And another duet, she duetted with B.J. Thomas on the theme for Growing Pains.
She sounded great.
She was like the go-to duet girl back then.
I just can't.
She put Kiki D right out of business.
It had to happen. I'm sorry. Somebody had to do it.
Where are we? Oh, this gets interesting now. The top of the list I noticed before. Remember a few weeks ago, we were doing 1983, I think, and there was a coincidence at the top of the list. Number one and number two were Total Eclipse of the Heart and Making Love Out of Nothing at All, both written by Jim Steinman.
Yes.
We have another similar coincidence now. At the top of the charts this week, back in 87, number two was Money Money by Billy Idol. Number one was I Think We're Alone Now by Tiffany. These are both covers of songs originally by Tommy James and the Shondells from back in the 60s. Isn't that crazy? And there they are, both at the top of the chart.
The minute you said Money Money, I was like, oh, there's another one you can't escape at weddings. I really liked Tiffany's treatment of I Think We're Alone Now.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a nice little catchy, harmless, poppy song. That was like her first big hit, I believe.
I think I was in that demographic at the time that would have been.
Yeah, you were the perfect age for to be a Tiffany fan back then, certainly. I think like the New Kids on the Block, who I know you're a massive fan of, I remember when they were opening for her. Their first big tour was opening on the big Tiffany tour, as I recall.
Yes, you recall correctly.
Why do I know that?
I don't know, but I'm sorry.
And Money Money I heard a lot of back then because Ed's old high school band Vortex, they would always play Money Money. That's the song. They would set off an explosion during that song.
Oh, I remember
they would actually,
story.
Yeah, we talked about this with Ed. Yes. Right? We had him on the show to talk about Vortex. Vortex, Ed's old band, would actually literally set off an explosion during Money Money.
So that song.
And believe it or not, sometimes if there were any adults in the area, they would get very upset. And back then we were like, what? What's the problem? All we're doing is setting off an explosion during this song.
It's These harmless.
Idiot 17-year-old kids. With explosives. Why are you so upset? Both these songs also were parodied at the time by Weird Al. Weird Al did Alimony, and he did I Think I'm a Clone Now.
Yes. Good songs. All right. Coming from a family of disc jockeys, as I have, Money Money, I remember being the song where you'd look out on the dance floor and go, nobody's dancing.
Oh, yeah?
And you put that on.
But this is before Money Money, Nobody's Dancing. Then you put it on.
Right.
Yep.
And either it would work and people would get up and dance, or you'd just give up. that was kind of like your last chance. That was some...
Wow.
It was, if this doesn't work, nothing's going to work.
Right.
That's how I remember that song.
Not even Breakout by Swing Out Sister? That wouldn't pack the dance floor?
If they're not dancing to Money Money, they're not dancing to Swing Out Sister. Come on now.
Well, Cornflake, that's a fun list. That was your top 10 in November 1987.
I feel kind of bad about making fun of Stevie Nicks now, but...
Yeah, you're getting bitches.
Can I make an honorary mention for 1987?
Yeah, go ahead. What you got?
In 1986's episode, we talked about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And it was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's first year. Well, 1987 would be the first year that there was a female inductee.
Yes, I know who it is. I'm going to let you say it this time.
It was Aretha Franklin.
That's right. Aretha went in 87, and that was the first woman in the Hall of Fame.
Aretha Franklin has the same birthday as I am, which means I'm a lot older than you thought.
You're the queen of soul. I had no idea. What else do we have to talk about today, Cornflake? I have a couple of things.
All right, tell me about things.
Just to get caught up on what I've been up to. Not long ago, a few days back, I actually reunited with a couple of old friends of mine, and you know these guys. You remember these guys from the old grind scene down in Franklin. I used to run an open mic night, for anyone who doesn't remember, a long time ago, 20 years ago. I spent the mid to late 90s in a coffee shop.
Which is where you wanted to be.
Most people spent the 90s in a coffee shop. That's what we did back then.
It was perfect, really.
Yeah. So I ran an open mic night at a coffee house. And two of my regular performers, though, that would come to my open mic night all the time were, you know these guys, Sean and Adam.
The Basics.
Yeah, they used to perform. They went by the name The Basics at one point. They went through a bunch of band names. There were different guys that would be in their band at different times, and they went through several name and lineup changes over the years. But for several years, they were called The Basics. And Sean, especially, has really kept at it ever since. Yeah, he's one of the people that really graduated from that old open mic scene. Because Sean still performs at clubs and bars and restaurants and stuff multiple times a week all throughout central Massachusetts, I think, is his main territory. But it had been several years since I'd seen these guys. It's Sean and his brother Adam. And I happened to see that they were doing a show down in Franklin, Massachusetts. And Franklin is where my old coffee house used to be.
The Grind.
The Grind is where I ran that open mic all those years ago. And they were playing at a restaurant in Franklin, like a half mile down the street from where that old coffee house used to be. And get ready for a shock, but I had nothing better to do. So it was a last-minute decision, but the mayor and I went flying down to Franklin and surprised Sean and Adam. They had no idea we were going to be there. But we had a nice little Grind reunion moment down there. And we got to hang out and watch Sean and Adam. Usually Sean performs solo, but once in a while Adam will come join him and harmonize and sing and stuff, you know. And Sean is a great guitarist, and he's got a whole bunch of guitars, and he uses all the effects pedals and stuff and does, like, looping and harmonizing and stuff.
Let me see if I remember correctly. Did they used to cover Men at Work?
Yes. Oh, with me.
Yes.
Yeah, Sean and I. Sean and I and Adam, we had a side project of ours. We had a band called God's Comics. And we were a Men at Work and Elvis Costello cover band. And we have performed so far twice. We perform every 10 years.
That's more than once.
Oh, yeah. It's twice. We did a show in 1999, and we announced we shall perform again 10 years from now. And we did. In 2009, we did another show.
So you get a couple years.
We're 2 years away. Yeah. Oh, we were talking about it the other night when I saw him. We have not forgotten. It's almost time for another God's Comic show. 2 more years, we will definitely do it. Oh, yeah. We do Men at Work songs. We do Elvis Costello songs.
That's excellent.
And that's it. We told Colin Hay about it once. Sean and I went to see Colin Hay.
That's so great.
Do a show. And we said we do a cover act of covers of your songs. And he said, oh, do you sound like me? And I said, no. No, we sound awful. Sean sounds great, however. And this was cool. We spent like 3 hours just kicking back and watching Sean and Adam. They just do a lot of classic rock, usually. So just lots of Beatles, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, a lot of The Who, all that stuff. And just beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Well, they're immensely talented.
They're great. That was so cool. And you remember those old Grind coffee house days.
Yes, I was a late comer to the scene. But
yeah, you got there just in time.
Just in time to see it all fall
right
apart.
At the end. It came crumbling down around you. We had a good run there.
I'm so sorry. I ruined your scene.
Those were good times.
Yeah, they were. They were a highlight of the shows.
You know, and of course we were talking about a lot of old stories and memories and stuff. And Sean said he remembered the first time that they came to perform at my open mic night. And he said, I was on stage and I had to tune my guitar. And it was taking a long time. And Sean told me, you actually came, meaning me, you actually came up to the front and said, next time, tune your guitar before you start playing. And he was freaked out and felt sorry and ashamed. For one thing, I don't remember that moment happening. I'm sure it did. And I'm also thinking, what kind of monster was I back then? What a creep. Yeah, I told him, wow, I'm sorry. And I'm surprised you came back. Glad you did.
Yeah.
I ran a tight show back then, apparently.
I can't picture it, but I can totally picture you, like, wishing you could take that back if it were possible.
Poor guy's trying to tune his guitar, and there I am, cracking the whip, you know? Let's move.
Right. Let's get the show on the road.
You know, what I loved with those guys back then, though, is oftentimes people would sign up. You know, it's open mic night, we'd have a sign-up list. If you want to do a song, read a poem, do some songs, whatever you want to do, sign up. And oftentimes people would not want to go on right away. They'd be like, I don't want to go on first. I'm too nervous. There was a young girl who would like to sing, and she'd always say, put me down third, please. I always want to be third. Or my friend's coming at 9 o'clock, so I can't go on till then. You know, you'd hear a bunch of stories like that. So sometimes I'd have these big gaps in my schedule where nobody wanted to play. And then here comes Sean and Adam, and they knew a million songs, and they could fill whatever time I needed. And I could always say, hey, guys, can you do a half hour? Because I've got a half hour open here. And they'd do it.
Wow.
So these were my MVP performers back then, even though apparently it did not begin well.
And look at the way you talk to them.
And then other people, I remember getting a hard time about it. Like, I remember someone complaining to me, like, wow, why do those guys always get to play so long? And that's because they're willing to.
Right.
Nobody else wanted to go on first. That's why. Those guys are great. So I wanted to throw out a nice hello and thanks to them. And check out Sean Fullerton. Again, he is out playing around central Massachusetts all the time. And you can find him at SeanFullertonMusic.net. And that's S-E-A-N. Sean, you know? F-U-L-L-E-R-T-O-N music.net. Check him out. Good guy.
You won't regret it.
Yes. And the other thing I did recently was, I think it was the very next day after seeing those guys again, my little buddies from the grind, we went to Super Mega Fest.
That's right.
Another wacky comics convention here in the Massachusetts area.
Yeah, I think that particular weekend I did hear some murmurings online about the various things going on there.
Yeah, MegaFest. I made an appearance on Saturday and Sunday. I didn't stick around at nighttime, so I didn't see like the big comedy show with Nikki Luparelli and everybody and the late night partying antics. I missed all that. I popped in for the day on Saturday and then again on Sunday. And let's see, let me tell you who I saw there. Well, I was going to see the Flash panel, the Q&A, with John Wesley Shipp and Amanda Pays, but I got there early, and Corbin Burnson was on stage doing his Q&A. Corbin Burnson, people know from L.A. Law. He was one of the lawyers on L.A. Law back in the 80s. And Major League, people know him from that wacky baseball comedy movie, which I never saw, but people love it.
I saw it.
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
He was in me. You didn't get it. I'm sure if I did see it, I would understand it, but I never did.
I understood. I didn't get what was funny about it.
You didn't like it.
Well,
that's
yeah.
Okay.
When I say I didn't get it,
you understood
I
it.
You understood the premise.
It didn't go over your head. This movie is way too complicated for me.
Baseball business. I just don't understand. No, I didn't get the appeal is what I'm trying
to
say.
Yeah, I never. It did not look great to me, so I never saw it. Look at us trashing poor Corbin Burnson's movie. A lot of people like it.
Not Corbin Burnson's fault, though.
No, I'm sure he was fine in it. Good guy. So I caught the end of Corbin's talk, which was fun. But then here comes John Wesley Shipp and Amanda Pays, and they're from The Flash.
Both of them together.
You know, the fastest man alive?
Yeah, dude.
And this was the Flash TV series back in 1990. John Wesley Shipp was The Flash, and Amanda Pays was Dr. Tina McGee, who worked with The Flash. And now, of course, on the new Flash series, John Wesley Shipp, they brought him back in to be the father of the new Flash. Now he's played other characters on Flash as well, because there's all kinds of parallel Earths and stuff going. It's very complicated. And they brought Amanda Pays back. She's been on a couple of times just as a guest as her same character from the original show. She was back on as Dr. Tina McGee, which was fun.
That's neat.
She's actually married in real life to Corbin Burnson.
Oh, well, it's convenient. They can go out to conventions together.
Sure. Saves the convention the cost of another hotel room, you know?
That's perfect.
Yeah,
really.
They should always book married people. They were fun, though. That was very cool seeing John and Amanda together. I'd never seen Amanda at a show before. John Wesley Shipp, actually, he made an obvious point, but not one that I think I've heard before. But he said what he likes about conventions is he says this is the reverse of when we do the shows. Like, we go to the conventions, we take off our costumes, and you all put on your costumes, you know, addressing the audience. You know? And I thought, yeah, never thought of it that way, but he's right.
He's totally right.
Yeah. And after that, I stayed for one more celebrity Q&A, and that was Edward James Olmos.
That had to be interesting.
I've seen him speak before. I don't think I've ever seen him speak solo. I've seen him at Dragon Con a couple of times as part of a larger Battlestar Galactica cast panel. This was solo Edward James almost.
He's fascinating.
Yeah, of course. I mean, going back to what Stand and Deliver and Blade Runner. He talked about Miami Vice extensively, which I never watched Miami Vice, so I never saw him on it. But he had long, long stories about working on Miami Vice. So much work. I knew him from The West Wing. He was a Supreme Court justice on The West Wing. He was great on that. When I have seen him before, just a very, very passionate speaker and a fascinating guy. And I talked to him afterwards. Actually, I met him and spoke for a few minutes later that day because he mentioned something. He's very involved in some kind of an education program. He works with some kind of education charity program. You know, and of course, he's speaking about how important education is and all that. Okay. But then he specifically mentioned how important it is that kids learn critical thinking. And that got, you know, that gets my attention right away as, you know, part of the Boston Skeptics. So that's what we're all about. We're stressing teach science, teach critical thinking. And yes, that was cool to hear that Edward James Olmos was acknowledging that's what's important, you know. Got to learn how to think.
And he is actively furthering that in the world.
Yeah, isn't that terrific?
It really is.
Meanwhile, he's in Blade Runner at the same time. What a guy.
And I already thought he was cool.
We have a lot of people out there who do not know how to think critically. And you may have noticed it's caused some problems.
You could say.
We'll leave it at that. The other, the only other celebrity guest that I actually met besides Edward James Olmos was Paul Soles. Paul Soles did a lot of voice acting over the years. Back in the 60s, he was the voice of Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man cartoon, the Spider-Man 1967 series, the one with the super catchy theme song that everybody knows. That was the guy. That was Spider-Man back then. And he also did a bunch of voices on the other Marvel cartoon series of the 60s. And most importantly, for our purposes, since we're so obsessed with animated Christmas specials from Rankin-Bass, the very first one, 1964, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, this guy was the voice of Hermie the Elf.
The dentist.
The elf dentist wannabe. He didn't want to make toys.
He wanted to be a dentist.
This was the guy, Paul Soles. There he is, sitting there, you know? So I thought, I've got to go meet Paul Soles. That's an opportunity you don't want to pass up.
Yeah.
And he's 87 years old, I think. You know, there are not many people left who were involved in those early Rankin-Bass shows. So we've got to treasure our chances to talk to these people while we can.
So he was super young when he worked on this.
Yeah. I mean, that was 50-something years ago. So was he in his early 30s, I guess, if I'm doing the math right. And yeah, I had a few questions for him about doing the voice, making the show back then, which was nice. And then, of course, I wished I, after I walked away, then I thought of like 50 more questions that I wanted to ask him. But it was nice to, you know, hear some stuff about the making of that classic first Rankin-Bass cartoon from one of the guys that was actually there. And of course, you know, I told him he started to catch on to what just what a drooling, obsessed fan I am of all this stuff.
Did it make him nervous?
Yeah, he got up and backed away.
Started to back off.
Then turned around and just started running really fast. Yeah, it did kind of end like that. When I told him, you know, I said, you know, my wife and I watched these Rankin-Bass shows every year. And then he asked me, he said, do you have kids? And I said, we are kids.
That's the best answer.
We're still just so endlessly delighted by these goofy Rankin-Bass shows ourselves. We're not going to share it with any new generation of kids. No, they're all from me. Thank you. But yeah, Hermie the Elf. So that was a treat meeting Paul Soles. But yeah, there were lots of other wacky celebrities lurking about. I don't think we mentioned it on the show, on our preview show, but a late addition to the lineup, Nikolai Volkoff was there from the World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, I don't think we mentioned that.
Nikolai was there.
That would have stuck out in my mind.
As in Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik from a tag team from back in the 80s. This was the big Russian wrestler from the WWF.
I remember him from the cartoons.
Oh, yeah. He was in the cartoons, too, wasn't he? And he was in the Cyndi Lauper Goonies video.
Yep.
He was one of the many wrestlers who appears. He's singing the Russian, the Soviet national anthem as the truck pulls up. Because that was his thing back then. They would introduce Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik. And then he would speak with the ring announcer. He'd have a little conference. And then the ring announcer would take the mic and say, ladies and gentlemen, Nikolai Volkoff now asks that you all rise and and respect his singing of the Soviet national anthem. And as I recall, people were less than respectful. But he would belt out.
Would you say that that riled the crowd up just a little?
But Nikolai, at Super Mega Fest, he's wearing the big red jacket. He had a big jacket with a Soviet and American flag together on the back. And he's wearing the hat. He's got the big Russian hat on.
Oh, of course.
So he was still all dressed up in character. He's 70 years old. I looked up because he, you know, he looks like he's getting on in years. I looked up his age. He's 70. On the bio, like his little celebrity bio in the program for MegaFest, it says Nikolai Volkoff is a Croatian-born semi-retired professional wrestler. And I said, semi? Semi-retired? So I don't know what that means. I hope he's not still wrestling.
Only when it moves him.
Nice to see him there, though. And I think you can actually see him in our photo album on our Facebook page from the convention. I took a picture of a couple that was dressed as the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman, the action figures. I took their picture, and then it turns out you can see Nikolai in the background of that picture. So if you go to our album, look for Nikolai hiding in the background.
Nikolai Volkov is the best photobomb.
He did. He photobombed my picture of the bionic couple. Speaking of which, the mayor of Chickentown joined me at Megafest on Sunday, and we saw a Q&A with Lee Majors and Lindsay Wagner. The $6 million man and the bionic woman were there together. And I've seen them together a couple of times over the years at conventions, but that's just always a treat.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Man, those were my heroes.
Kind of thinking it doesn't get much better than that.
And speaking of wrestlers, they were actually talking about working with Andre the Giant because played Bigfoot on the $6 million man back then.
There are so many interesting stories about that man.
So that was really fun hearing them talk together. But yeah, a lot of great costumers were hanging around. I didn't take a lot of pictures, but I do have a few pictures up on our Facebook page if you want to go check that out. Oh, we ran into Nikki Sunday as well. We didn't see her show Saturday night, but Nikki was hanging out at MegaFest Sunday, so that was cool. Got to say hi to Nikki Luparelli.
How's she doing?
She's good. She said the comedy show was good. Sorry I missed it. She has a big show coming up later in November, and that is her annual Thanksgiving weekend David Bowie tribute shows in Harvard Square. It's Nikki and her band just doing all Bowie all night, plus a bunch of burlesque dancers and performers, you know, swirling all around them. It's their big show called Oh You Pretty Things, a.k.a. David Booby. I'm certainly planning on checking that out.
It wouldn't be the holidays without these shows.
Yeah, so Nikki is getting ready for that show as we speak. That's going to be great. I bought one thing at Super Mega Fest, and here it is. There's a guy that sells records and music memorabilia at all these local conventions.
I've seen him.
Yeah, you know this guy. He's actually a member of the band Loose Salute also, which is a Monkees cover band.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah, talented guy. But I just happened to glance at his table. I wasn't planning on buying anything. But look what he had. I've never seen this before. I didn't know this existed. This is a book about the Cars.
Called Frozen Fire?
Frozen Fire, which is a line from Let's Go, one of the Cars' classic songs. But I didn't know this book existed. This is from 1985. This looks like something you'd buy like through the Scholastic Book Club.
Yeah, it does.
But there it was, and it was cheap, so now it's ours.
Look at those black and white pictures.
Crazy.
Few pages.
Look at that. The Cars, we were just talking about, because they're among the nominees for possible induction in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame next year.
Look at that hair.
And we're pulling for him. Yeah, these are seriously mid-80s Cars we're looking at here. So that was Super Mega Fest, Cornflake.
Sounds like a good time.
Possibly our final convention of the year. There's one more coming up. I don't know if we'll get out to that one or not. We'll see. We're getting very busy as the year draws to a close.
Mm-hmm.
That might be it till January, but we'll see.
I'm not busy. I'm just tired all the time.
Well, yeah, there's that too. We're a combination of busy and tired, and that's a dangerous combination for the likes of us.
Conventions are fun, but I want to curl up in a ball and
yes,
sleep. But I think I have to help end the show before that.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Then we can just collapse. Get us out of here.
Sure. Flopcast.net is our website. We'd love it if you would check it out. Also, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/flopcast. We have a Twitter handle. It is @flopcast. And we're on Instagram, the_flopcast.
Yes, yes. Well, Cornflake, I think you and I ought to just go out and get in line for our Swing Out Sister tickets. It's time to party. Time to break out.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Let's go do this.
We're going to party like it's 1987. We'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Hello, Marvel Universe! The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Volkov requests that you all rise and respect his singing of the Soviet national anthem.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.